Welcome to Bicom's Huddyun Weekly Podcast. We have a special edition of our podcast this week as I am in Tel Aviv with our Israel director, Richard Pater. Thanks for joining me, Richard.
It's great to be here. Lovely to have you here in Israel.
That's very nice of you to say that. We've been attending the conference of the Institute for National Security Studies, hearing from all of Israel's leading politicians as well as security figures, and we also had a chance to attend the launch event and first major speech by former Chief of Staff and leader of Hossein Israel, Israel Resilience Party, Benny Gantz. More of that in a moment. We'll be discussing what that inaugural speech was like by Benny Gantz, what's the impact been in the polls. We're already seeing some early polls just 24 hours later with that initial reaction of what that means for his party support. And we'll be talking about what has Prime Minister Netanyahu's reaction been to that launch, what's his strategy going to be towards Gantz, and how's he going to conduct himself in the remaining sort of 9.5 weeks of the campaign. So we were both there together. We soaked up the atmosphere. If you can picture an exhibition centre, someone described some of the surroundings as a bit sterile, but it definitely had the atmosphere of a new party launch, lots of sort of keen young volunteers, all the top Israeli journalists, I imagine a sprinkling of people that have been with him throughout his whole journey through life, friends, family, all sorts of people that he was greeting as he came in. But it was a real moment of expectation of what is this former chief of staff gonna act like when he's there in the middle of this massive crowd giving his first speech. What was your initial reaction, Richard?
Well, I have to say, I think I was pleasantly surprised by the energy and excitement in the room. I mean, it's very easy for us to be cynical and weary already, although there's plenty of weeks to go in this campaign. But there was there seemed to be a genuine vibe in the room. There was probably, by estimate, 600 or 700 people in the room, and as well as the kind of, as you say, the people that have been close to him in his life, there was clearly enough of a atmosphere of excitement around something genuinely new. And I think he delivered on the hype to a large degree. He's not known as a leader that has great charisma, but the headline, at least in one of the newspapers this morning, was "Wow, he discovered some charisma." Mm-hmm. And I think his speech was also well calibrated, very much as where he wants to be in the centre of Israeli politics, talking about the unity, talking about that leadership can be, it doesn't have to be this way, self-serving, and can look out for the interests of the people.
Well, the Jerusalem Post said it was the Israeli version of motherhood and apple pie. Is that would you agree with that?
Yeah, listen, there was definitely something kind of authentically Israeli about talking to those values. I mean, when he finished up quoting the Hatikvah, and by the time he got to that point, the Israeli national anthem, by the time he got to that point, it didn't even feel that cheesy. It kind of felt appropriate and reasonable, that his message was full of hope and inspiration. I think someone else kind of compared him to Yitzhak Rabin as kind of this, and that's obviously the kind of the successful model that he is looking to replicate as the former general that's coming in, that has kind of heard the calling of the people of Israel and has risen to the challenge to lead. At least that's kind of his agenda.
It was a really carefully choreographed sort of sequence of events. I mean, someone pointed out that, you know, earlier in the day he tweeted photos of himself visiting the grave of his parents. He grew up on this small moshav, this kind of collective farming community, but he mentioned it in the speech. He mentioned his parents, Holocaust survivors, that he grew up in a community where secular and religious sort of lived side by side in mutual respect. And he mentioned that word a lot, didn't he? Respect. He talked a lot about how there should be unity, about people shouldn't be attacking each other, making obviously a reference to Prime Minister Netanyahu and attacks by him and his people on the Attorney General, on the police, on other organs of state, saying that you shouldn't have attacks on public officials. He really did paint himself as this kind of honest, clean candidate, and he sort of said, he gave an impression that you're not in it for personal gain, and talking a lot about his commitment to the country, but he sort of implied that, you know, what you see is what you get with me. And there was that line where he said, you know, I know where I come from and I know where I'm going to, implying sort of some quite humble beginnings. He's not a particularly showy individual, but he sort of seems to carry it off. There is an honesty about it. There is an integrity about it. Would you agree?
I think so, yeah. And I think last night he nailed it in terms of exactly ticking all those boxes. I particularly like the moment. The only time he mentioned Netanyahu by name was actually in a positive context, or at least he was telling it in a positive context about that he mentioned Rabin and Menachem Begin and then Bibi, the idea of that he'd signed the wire cords and made the Bar-Ilan speech, perhaps there's also a kind of a dig at Netanyahu that they're the two aspects of his career that Netanyahu is less likely to flag up in the current time.
That he redeployed Israeli forces and sort of, you know, did that division of Hebron in when was it, 97, and the Y River Agreement in 98. Right. Right. It's not something he talks about a lot.
No,
it's true.
No,
it's not,
and kind of obviously shaking as a consequence of that, shaking Arafat's hand as well, which is again not something that Netanyahu himself will highlight. Although there were plenty of kind of, without mentioning Netanyahu's name, plenty of digs at him and the way that that he is acting. And there was a reference to Louis XIV, which the Likud afterwards picked up on, saying that's an outrageous comparison. And obviously put kind of again in the context for Gantz, saying things will be different when he puts the country and the people first, and not be self-serving.
And there were three things I think people were looking out for. I mean, as well as the style and how he carried himself, which I think we agreed, maybe there were low expectations because he's seen as not this is a big ego, but and someone with huge charisma. But he did seem to occupy the space. He did look comfortable eventually, and I think that's important. But I think there were three things people were looking out for. What would he do about serving in a Netanyahu government or not? And he made it clear that there's been some discussion, but he said you have no business being a prime minister if you're kind of under indictment. He didn't say I will never serve with Netanyahu. He kind of implied that he wouldn't even get to that first discussion because you shouldn't even be prime minister if you've been indicted by the Attorney General. So that was interesting. The second thing I was looking out for was what's his plan vis-a-vis the Palestinians and vis-a-vis the West Bank? And he's sort of putting himself in that list with Begin and Rabin and paying homage to these statesmen and mentioning Bibi's record. He kind of implied that he would be the person that would make big decisions, that he would try and seek peace. And he was specific, and I read into this about what he said about settlements, where he talked about the main settlement blocks being necessary to stay part of Israel, and he talked about the Jordan Valley. And so that takes you much more to a more traditional view of what a final status deal should look like, keeping those two areas and perhaps being able to negotiate everything in between, which is the isolated settlements and the outposts. And it was interesting that came almost on the same day, wasn't it, that Bibi Netanyahu was visiting an isolated settlement where he was kind of saying, we're never going to leave here. So what did you read into that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I mean, again, it was very carefully calibrated to find the middle ground, to talk to the consensus, to not upset anyone in the middle, and talking about the blocks, reminding that Jerusalem will remain Israel's capital, the Golan Heights and the Jordan Valley were kind of the places he name dropped were kind of a key consensus issues amongst the at least amongst the centre.
Yeah.
James, I was going to ask you, kind of coming in. I mean, as I said, it's great to have you here, and you've spent a lot of your career around British politicians. What did you kind of note of the experience from last night that was perhaps uniquely Israeli, or any similarity, some of the similarities and difference with kind of how that event would have looked like in the UK?
I think it was a very interesting kind of party atmosphere. I mean, it's that decision, isn't it? I mean, if you wanted to, you know, merely just give a speech, there are many ways you could do it in a much more safe, closed environment. But they decided to make it a party. It was in this kind of big warehouse space. There is a risk in that, in the sense that you can't control exactly who's going to be there. And we saw at the beginning, there was this heckler who was shouting at him about, I didn't quite catch what, but something that particular individual was upset about, and how he dealt with that, as in he let the guy speak. And then he sort of said, this is what democracy is about, and he sort of, you know, that was actually a bit of a painful moment. Like, you know, the whole country's waiting live on TV news that he's going to give this speech, and it's ruined by this guy shouting at him. And you think, you know, how's this going to go down? How's he going to deal with it? I thought it was really interesting that it was more of a party atmosphere, lots of cheering, lots of sort of revving up the crowd beforehand. That's perhaps much more American, but also become much more universal in terms of how you build up a political brand. But I think, you know, the whole thing been building up with sort of videos being played on Twitter, films being posted, the picture of him at the graveside, and then you had the video jingle and all this kind of stuff. And I think it was something uniquely Israeli, this bizarre sort of mixture of a sort of European and American kind of political atmosphere. It was actually a long speech. I think that was also quite interesting. I think you can have a situation where a politician go in there and speak maybe for 10 minutes. It was actually a really long speech. I mean, it went on for half an hour. But otherwise, you know, like I say, I think he filled the space. I think he spoke reasonably well. And then the other thing we haven't mentioned, he's brought Moshe Bogi Yaalon, former chief of staff, former defense minister, into his ticket. And he unveiled him at that. So you had the two chiefs of staff, and there was a kind of moment where Gantz said, you know, he was my former boss, but now, you know, know, we're together and kind of, you know, he's working with me. I don't really understand what that gives him, because Yatalon doesn't have this big constituency that he brings over. But you had some thoughts about what it gives him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it necessarily adds at this stage, at least to him electorally. But I do think it gives him some authenticity on the right. I mean, Yalon is a right wing politician. He came from the Likud. Worth remembering that he dropped out over the case of Elor Azaria, where he called up. That was a black flag moment within for the IDF, and that didn't accept that he wasn't being condemned enough. And when he was kind of booted out by Netanyahu and then replaced by Lieberman. And from then for that moment he was a right wing politician without really a constituency. But I think it was for Gantz, it was calibrated. I mean, I would suggest, I mean, the Likud already is running the campaign that Gantz is a left winger, and one of the photos that Gantz posed on social media with his team, the Likud have broken that down and highlighting numerous people that have worked for the Labour Party in the past. Mm. So this helps shore up his credentials as a centrist. I would imagine it also gives him some bandwidth to bring in some genuine left wing candidates onto the list as well, if that's what he wants to do, so he can surround himself by left and right. But I agree, the moment last night that Yatalon came on the stage and they gave each other a hug, these were two former chief of staff, both with an impeccable security record as far as the Israeli public is concerned, and to see them uniting and standing together was a rare and impressive moment. So I think that image, that kind of, to take the term of kind of that victory picture, is good enough to kind of to take them forward.
It did the job.
Yeah, I think so.
And the polling's been interesting today. There was an early poll this morning that said that his party had gone up from sort of a low teens to sort of 19, and then you're saying that there's a poll perhaps tonight that's going to be 23 seats.
Yes, that's on Cannes News. I mean, as we're recording, it's just breaking now. And again, as we've always said on the podcast here, we should take these polls with a pinch of salt. But the breaking the 20 mark and going up to 23, although that same poll is saying that Likud has also strengthened to 31, but it means also that clearly the Yair Lapid's Yesh Atid party and Labour will be the biggest casualties, having dropped. I mean, it's substantial that there is that, but I think there is also anticipated that bounce, and I think when we come back and talk next week, we should see where they are. As also within the next couple of weeks, we will know the formation of the lists, the party lists, and who else they're bringing on, which will also be a substantial indicator for the Israeli public.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about polls before, and we know that also there's various issues with how they are put together, but they give us an indication of a trend. You would expect a bounce after he speaks first, and I think the really big issue will be, as you say, how does he maintain that over the next sort of 9 weeks, but also crucially, like you mentioned, what happens within the blocks. If Likud is still there with 30 plus and you're just seeing seats being taken away from Yesh Atid and Labour in the centre, then nothing's really changed, and Bibi's own comment was like, I don't really care how the left votes amongst itself, becomes a reality that you're just shifting the deck chairs, which takes us to Bibi. It was very significant that, you know, hadn't even finished speaking, and the strategy from people on the right and people on the Likud was just to say, just keep saying, you know, this shows that he's a leftist, and they're just trying to paint him and just keep saying it. I mean, do you think that that's effective? Is that not going to get a little bit boring over the next 8-9 weeks?
That's going to be the main attack. I mean, we also saw that Bennett in the last few days was attacking Gantz's military record. You know, he called him the chief of staff of the score draw, effectively, and kind of was playing down, kind of challenging his security credentials. I think a combination of challenging his credentials but I think primarily of painting left. I mean, again, I think we've discussed in this podcast before that in this campaign, being called a left winger is the worst insult you can call someone. And as Gantz is very carefully trying to present himself as a centrist candidate, then it's very comfortable for the right-wing parties to kind of push him to the left. So yeah, I mean, I imagine they will keep up with that message. That will be.
So what does Bibi do now? I mean, we've had reports that, I mean, he's carrying on being Prime Minister. Obviously, he gets the opportunity, he has the advantage. He can use the state to sort of, you know, puff himself up during the campaign. He can, you know, get put on the flak jacket, go and visit the troops. He can do all sorts of things like that. We've heard that he's announced a programme of foreign visits. He's going to visit Poland. He's going to go to India, potentially, and sign a big arms deal. He's going to go to the US. He'll get to go to APAC. He will meet Trump in Washington. Do you see in that a strategy that he just shows, look, I'm the Prime Minister, I'm getting on with it, and you know, that'll really be his plan?
Very much so. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head there, that there are two aspects. First of all, he's very much enjoying his stint as defence minister again today, kind of mixing with the troops and getting out in the field, plays very well. And then exactly that, presenting that and Netanyahu, and I think credit where it's due, he deserves some credit for where he is placing Israel on the international map. He announced that he'll be attending this conference in Poland along with other Middle East and Gulf states, discussing the Iranian threat. It's very significant that he is effectively affecting some change of shifting the priorities of the region against Iran. Again, if he goes to India, again another up and coming power with another defence deal potentially under his belt. All these things do play well and are a kind of appropriate action that kind of very. It won't be missed that it's convenient that he's doing his job as Prime Minister, but also serving his constituency and serving an election campaign.
It's the incumbent's advantage, which is very useful as long as things are going well. But if you get a crisis on any of Israel's borders or you get terrorism problems, then obviously that becomes potentially a disadvantage if he doesn't handle it well. And also Israel's opponents know that they can potentially try and affect him in that way. So fascinating. All eyes then really next on what happens with the polls. What does Gantz do or say next? Is Gantz going to keep up this quite silent strategy and not keep intervening and sort of, you know, getting in the gutter with all the other politicians? Will he try and stay above the fray and really just waiting for the Attorney General to announce whether or not he'll indict Prime Minister Netanyahu and how that really affects the polls? Because we've seen already some polls saying that you expect the Likud support to go down slightly. That's all we've got time for. Thank you very much for listening. Please do rate us on iTunes. Join us next week. Richard, it's great to be with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.